good morning, good afternoon, and or good night, depending on where you are and what time of day it is when you're listening to this. This is Brock. It's the Sprocket Podcast with a little more extra coverage from Boston Month. Boston Month, of course, was the month of December, and it's also the month of January, because that's when you get to hear these interviews that I collected while I was there. So just wanted to let you know, this is Phoebe Sinclair. She is one of our listeners. She is also, according to her website, a writer, listener, bike commuter, daughter, partner, friend, sister, layerer of clothing, cat mom, lazy crafter, volunteer, afflicted with serious hyper-local wanderlust, and troublemaker, among other things. She also does some writing, and she's been a listener to The Sprocket for some time, been a great commenter, and it's always a pleasure to interact with her anytime we get a chance. She was on the show some time back, and I got a chance to catch up down in Jamaica Plain in Boston. We talked about all kinds of things involving Boston lifestyle. We talked about bicycling, we talked about transit, we talked about food, and what it's like to live in the area. So enjoy our long and rambling conversation. And at the end, you'll get Phoebe's website, which is wholeheartlocal.com, where you can find more information about her projects. We begin by talking about the place I got lunch, and we go on from there. Without further ado, Phoebe Sinclair on the Sprocket Podcast.
It looked to me like it was, you know how you have like a chain restaurant that doesn't want to look like a chain restaurant, and so you have... they have, like, the chalkboard, you know, menu and that sort of thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there was no reason for me not to think that they were, other than it looked, like, just slightly too slick to be homegrown. Yeah. So I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I don't really know what their deal is. They showed up there one day, and they've been there ever since. And I never see a lot of people in there, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. They seem to do okay.
And they seem to do a little bit of everything. It was like there were the onion rings and like the fried foods, the sandwiches, the cookies, like you say, like a bakery or whatever. And
I don't know where those baked goods come from. I don't know if they make them or not.
Yeah.
Well, I usually go to City Feed, which I refer to as the boutique grocer.
That's just down the street here as well, right?
Yes.
It's like a big blue
sign. Yeah, on the other end of where you were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
they make
I
really
saw
good
that.
Sandwiches.
Do they?
Yeah.
Maybe I should have gone there.
Next time.
I saw that and I thought, why is there a feed store in the middle of the city?
It's got like a, it's sort of a Pottery Barn kind of name.
Yeah.
This is really funny because when the Whole Foods came in and JP like exploded, City Feed was one of the stores that stepped up and they were like, you know, we don't really want these kinds of chains and it's like this marker of gentrification coming into the area and I was like, but you're like a grocer, a boutique grocer that's like kind of really expensive. So you're unique and they're only in this area and all this stuff.
Yeah.
At the same time, I was like, you're not that far away.
So homegrown gentrification is okay.
It's okay.
But chain gentrification, not so
particularly
much.
With the Whole Foods has become the beacon, right?
Yeah.
Of like,
I've noticed
going
a lot of
wrong.
Them. There's a ton of them around.
Oh, there's tons of them. Yeah, they're pretty much in every neighborhood. So
yeah.
I don't know if they're really a beacon of gentrification because they're almost in every neighborhood.
Yeah.
So
and they're, I mean,
all
they're
across
not,
the spectrum of like money and abilities and all that stuff. So they're more like a beacon of like, I don't know. I had nothing against them, but they're more like, they're like the health food store grown up.
Right.
You know, because I grew up going to health food stores for tiny and smelled like vitamins.
Right.
And like, we're kind of grubby.
Did you go to, when I think of health food, I guess I'm thinking more, like, GNC is like the
GNC
the vitamin
is like,
store.
There. Yeah, it's like that was around when I was a kid in Jersey, but it was more of it was sort of like a health food store, but / like, Muscle Man store.
Okay.
They had a lot of supplements and protein shakes. Yeah. And they've gone back and forth over the years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a whole world, that thing.
For sure. And so not so much like co-ops. Because there's co-ops and there's vitamin stores. And they're like...
Yeah.
They have some overlap.
They do have overlap. Yes.
But
I think the co-ops and those kinds of places tend to be a little bit more... they're oriented towards the community. But also they tend to have odder stuff.
Mm-hmm. Unusual supplies.
Like, really curious. Like, you can go... We have a tiny little co-op over here, and that's our main grocery store because it's, like, two streets over.
Yeah.
And they have, vegetarian bako bits.
Okay.
For... In bulk.
Really?
Which is... What are the chances that you need...
Right.
Large amounts of vegetarian bako bits? I don't know.
Well, it's a niche enough sort of thing. I suppose if you're going to bust it out, you want to bust it out in a very precise quantity.
Probably.
We need to make exactly 7 salads, and they all need to have bako bits on them.
It's a very curious
yeah.
thing.
So that I'm not sure if I've ever had the vegetarian version. Is that...
They just taste like smoke.
Yeah.
Like liquid smoke solidified.
Right.
Into small pieces.
And they're obviously not made of animal, so...
I'm going to guess it's like soy protein compressed or something like
sure.
that.
Sure, yeah. I have no idea. And this is different than the stuff that, like, I grew up going to buffet restaurants and there was always like the fake bacon bits.
I don't really know. I'm curious about that.
Because I assume those are made of like some sort of like
animal product?
Animal cast off, yeah.
I don't know. Like, I mean, I grew up vegetarian, so we were always on the fake bacon side. But actually, we didn't even eat that. That wasn't around.
Yeah. I just put a thing out on Twitter about just looking for like vegetarian and vegan options at restaurants and trying to figure out what's the best thing to look into. Because I'm not vegetarian or vegan, but I like
you walk the line.
Those things. And so it's like if I'm going to be somewhat responsible when I'm going out, you know, could I choose some of these things and would they be just as good? Do you have a favorite?
In the world of vegetarian and vegan?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Like, if you're going to a normal restaurant and you're like, what's the most comfortable option I can get?
If I go to, like, a Cheddar's or one of those big places like that, I usually end up eating, like, a grilled cheese sandwich or macaroni and cheese. It's not vegan. Vegan is tough for a lot of those
places.
Because they give you salad or, like, really sad limp vegetables, you know?
Yeah. Which is the primary problem whenever you say, like, oh, I don't eat meat. People are like, well, what do you eat?
Yeah. I know that's something that's still around. That was such a big thing when I was a kid. And now there's so many other eating styles. And yet that's still the question.
Yeah. Because people are fine with, the gluten-free or whatever, you know? But it's always still...
Yeah.
Somebody had Twittered an article about... I don't remember it well enough to actually talk about it. Maybe I'll forward it your way. It was pretty good. It's one of those things you see on Twitter, you know?
Yes.
Should we open the bottles?
Yes.
All right.
Let's go, too. I don't know if you want the glass or drinks in the bottle.
Oh, easy enough. Whichever is... The glass is classy, right?
Not really. It can be. I took them out just so you can have the option. I'm going to drink from the bottle because I'm just going to be lazy.
Sounds good.
Awesome.
I'll drink from the mason jar because it makes me feel... more connected to something.
Yeah, mason jars are our glasses around here. It's good, too, because once they get old, you're like, oh, you've been dropped a couple times. Into recycling with you.
And then you don't feel bad about it.
Yeah.
Unless it's a particular kind of mason jar.
Yeah, there's actually some huge ones.
Or you got, like, a custom job or something.
Oh,
like
those exist on, like, Etsy.
Yeah.
You can get them, like, etched. So shall we?
Cheers, yes.
Thanks for coming. And thanks for the invite.
Thanks for having me in. Yeah, definitely. And I realized, like, we should have made time in our schedule for you guys to actually be on the show when you were in town.
Oh, you already had a packed schedule then, so I can appreciate that.
But I realized also that generally people are never unhappy when we put out more than one episode a week. And so it's like, why not? Why not just tape?
Well, we'll be there again.
Yeah, when are you coming out?
I'm not sure, but if David's sister listens to this, not at the moment because it's just taping, but she'll be like, soon.
Sooner than later.
Yeah, we're hoping maybe in the spring.
Okay.
Spring or early summer.
That'd be good.
We have to. She's like out there not technically by herself, but there's no other family out there. So.
Right. You're the ones who visit.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're the ones who visit. So.
So last time you didn't have bikes at the time that you visited us, right? And was that in the fall?
It was November. It was last November.
We were talking about coffee outside, right?
Yes.
I think that was the episode. Yeah.
Yeah, the Sunrise Coffee Club.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
I listened to the episode enough times to actually remember that name.
Did you give it multiple listens?
I did, yeah. Nice. I was like, I kept missing myself. I was like, was I on this episode? I feel like I was.
Yeah.
So I listened to it a couple times.
Well, we only had so many mics. I need to expand our selection. Then we can get everybody in.
I haven't listened for a while because I've been biking.
Oh, yeah.
And when I bike, I listen to podcasts.
I think I remember you saying that some time back.
Yeah, so I listen to them all, like, usually in the winter, but it hasn't been a very cold winter. So
it's been a bikeable winter, right?
Yeah.
The show is good. We have a studio now, which is crazy.
Wow.
It's a little space down.
So you have to rent a space or you share it with another group?
Both. Yeah, we're renting it with some folks that we know.
Oh, cool.
There are just enough people in Portland that want to do like really weirdly specific transportation podcasts that we decided, why don't we just split a studio? And Lillian is the... I guess she's the host of the Bike Portland podcast, and she also does this thing called Transportini, where they compare transportation concepts to mixed drinks, and they have a resident bartender for it. So it's a short show, but it's great.
Yeah.
And then Steph Ralph is, she's doing something that it might not be as much, it might be more like urban design or something like that, and how that deals with poverty and privilege and class and stuff like that. So
that sounds fascinating. Awesome.
And that's not actually out yet, but she's working on it. So, yeah. But I want to, I want her to make it.
Yeah,
it
sounds like sounds very needed.
Yeah, for sure. And then there might be other ones coming down the pipe, but we'll see.
Wow. So you're going to have like a podcast group? I just learned about this concept.
Like a network?
Yeah. Yeah. I was listening to like a geek podcast or like the Atomic Geek Network or something. Okay. And there's all these podcasts related to like geekery and I don't know. I mean, these are broad terms, but
yeah,
like just silly stuff.
It's,
and, like,
it's a rabbit hole you can go down. Yeah. There are so many virtually like, because Nerdist is the one that I listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like
eight that,
shows
yeah.
on that. What's the other? I mean, there's 100.
Right.
Yeah. So there's literally a world of shows for any interest you have.
Yeah. Good thing you got in when you did.
I know. That's a weird thing is that I feel like now that the medium has exploded, it's really easy to get lost in it. So you found us, like, what, like 3 years ago?
3 or 4 years ago? Maybe 3 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't remember how, to tell you the truth. Yeah. That's the nature of the internet, right?
I was going to ask, but then, like, it's almost irrelevant because it's all connected by one link or another.
Yeah, I really don't know how I found out. It was your original co-host, Brandon?
Yeah.
Was on, and then he went off to college.
Mm-hmm.
So I listened for at least a year of him being on the podcast.
Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, but I really wish I should write down how I learned about things, you know. But the thing, you never know what's going to be important to you and what you're going to follow.
Exactly, yeah. And really, it's more important, like, what it means to you rather than how you found it.
That is true, yeah.
Unless it's, like, some fancy jacket that you found somewhere and you really wanted to remember.
But you usually do, though. You're like, oh, Paris.
Exactly.
And other people are like, oh, I couldn't have been Sears.
Why wasn't I there? Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't listen to things in your ears when you bike around.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
No, I'm very strict. I have this foolish idea that if I am careful about how I bike, I will not get run over.
Uh-huh.
And I know those things aren't necessarily connected.
I mean, it seems logical, right?
It seems logical, so I go with it. But yeah, I don't. A friend of mine actually gave me this little like a thing that holds your iPod on.
Oh yeah,
and with a tiny little speaker.
Uh-huh.
And I tried that recently, and the speaker was so low that I was like straining to hear it. And then I discovered that since I was straining to hear the speaker, I wasn't paying enough attention to the street, and I was like, well,
yeah.
Can't do that. So that one, by the way, is
fine. Yeah. I know there's the Boombonics is one that somebody.
Boombonics.
It's like an octagonal speaker that mounts on your thing. And it's designed so that you can hear it when you're riding around the city.
I've thought about that. But also, I really like that's one of the few times that I'm not connected to some kind of technology.
Right.
It's one of the few times I'm like in my body for the most part, where I'm supposed to be paying attention to what I'm supposed to be doing. And like, I don't. So even though my friend had given me that little speaker system, I was kind of like, I don't know. I don't want to, like, end this reign of, like, thoughtfulness and mindfulness that I'm taking part in. So
yeah, it's like your bike time is your you time.
Yeah,
it's,
exactly.
Yeah, it's organic time as opposed to digital.
Yeah, and there's a lot of moments when, you know, there's a lot of traffic and you get to, I'm really, like, concentrating on what I'm doing and, you know, trying to, I used to be a much angrier biker and now I've ended that.
How did that change for you?
I had to change it. Uh-huh. I actually have a couple of years ago, one of my New Year's resolutions was to come up with a phrase that I would use as I bike. So it's
kind of like a mantra?
Yeah, a mantra. Thank you. So it's like, may you be happy, may you be safe, may you be at peace.
Uh-huh.
And I repeat that every time someone cuts me off.
Yeah.
Or like, and then I repeat it for the person, I repeat it for myself.
Yeah.
So I do both. And if I'm like really mad, I do like a world version of it.
So how long did it take before you meant it?
It's a good question. I mean it at different levels, different times.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Sometimes I really mean it. And like, I recognize that this is not anyone's fault that this is happening. And other times I'm like, I really just want you to flip over that in your car and burst into flames.
Die in a fire.
Yeah. Therefore, I have to really concentrate on saying this. I say it a couple times.
For sure.
But yeah, I guess when I discovered one day that how much being angry, you know, reasonably, that really affects you, not the other people.
Yes. So, they don't usually feel your anger.
No, they're like, I'm in my car. Beep, beep, hi. You know?
Like, it sits with you way longer than it sits with them.
Yeah.
Even if you say something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even if you have the interact, it's a waste of time. So at the same time, I learned how to be more patient. I think I learned how to be more, less angry, really.
Yeah.
Because
it's
not worth it.
It's funny. Yeah, I go through.
Satisfying.
Yeah. It seems like it would be, right?
Mm-hmm.
It seems that you would be, if somehow you could unleash this thing inside of you, that it would go away.
Yeah.
But it's like an emotional oil spill.
That's a great analogy.
It goes everywhere.
I love that. You should write that down. Oh, wait. It's recorded for posterity.
Yes.
So what focus did you want for our conversation today?
You know, honestly, anything like that was good right there.
Okay.
I would say anything that's interesting to you. I was going to ask you what it's like just living in Boston. Like, what do you like about living here?
A lot of things. I'm still here.
Mm-hmm.
So I came in 96 for school, and I've been here ever since. Yeah. I went home one summer, and that was like the worst, you know?
Uh-huh.
I learned very quickly not to go home again.
Yeah, and home was
Jersey,
suburban New Jersey.
Yeah, it's the suburbs, but it's like it was the coast, and that has a different feel from like north suburbs. Jersey suburbs are all over the place in terms of what they're like, but so it was kind of like it's not rural, but it has a very a taste of like the ocean.
Yeah.
The coastal suburbs in Jersey.
I call them salt spray.
Yeah, like the scruffy beach towns. So it was just fine. I have no issue with Jersey. I like it. But I really love Boston. It's I meant to move to Seattle.
Okay.
I was like, I'm going to graduate college and move to Seattle. I've never been there.
Uh-huh.
I have another idea what it's like. I'm like, it sounds fun. You know?
Yeah.
But the friend I was going to move with moved before me. And then I was like, well, I'm going to finish my book because I'm a writer.
Yeah.
And then that book took 7 years to get to its end.
Yeah.
And by that time, I was like, my partner was up here. I was in, you know.
A lot changes in 7 years.
A lot changes in 7 years, yeah. The book didn't change that much in 7 years.
I guess maybe that's the hope, like you work on it.
Everything else did.
Yeah. And is the book, it's published, it's out?
No, I wish.
Okay.
No, that was, I don't know, this is the thing that happens, I think, with writers, where your first book, many people experience this, I think. The first book that you write is not the first book that gets published.
Okay.
Oftentimes, it's like the third book or the fourth book or the seventh book that gets published.
Gotcha.
So, I'm currently on my second publishable book. The first one, didn't have a market.
Okay.
I do children's, and at the time, that market was really, Hunger Games was out, Harry Potter was out, all sorts of, like, issue-driven books were out. Sexuality was really huge in the young adult market.
Mm-hmm.
My book didn't have any of that.
Okay.
So, it was like quiet literary book, you know.
Gotcha.
It did not have a place at the time.
Okay.
Which is fine.
Yeah, so you'll have that at the ready whenever it comes out.
Yeah, when that market comes back around again.
Yeah.
I'll be ready for that one.
Yeah.
I came here and I've been here ever since, and what I really like about Boston is that it has all these undercultures
mm-hmm.
that you don't necessarily know unless you live here or know people who are connected.
So yeah.
There's the music scene. There's like a independent rap scene that I've never been connected to, but I know about it.
Uh-huh.
There is a lot of fringe independent theater. A fair amount of dance. And then all of this, I don't even know what to call it because it doesn't have a name, but all these like little things. Like there used to be something called the Boston Skillshare, which was 2 days of workshops, people teaching anything they know.
Uh-huh.
And anyone could come. And it was $3 to $10 slide and scale. And
wow.
It was, like, totally changed my life. We learned so many different things. David became, like, he got into paleo eating.
Yeah.
And that totally changed his outlook. Then he got into, like, listened to podcasts about paleo eating. Then he got into hiking. And, like, all these little things sort of came out of, like, of the Skillshare.
Okay.
So that was, like, one subculture of people who just like learning, you know, but separate from the university kind of highbrow.
I was going to say there's a lot of education in this town, but
there's many levels of it and styles of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that had been awesome. And then there's like, there's a lot of activism and a lot of activist communities.
Okay.
They're loud or not loud, depending on what's going on. Like we had an Occupy that was there for a long time, before they got the boot.
Yeah.
And was that
on the common?
No, it was actually in a place that you would never expect. It was outside. You know where South Station is?
South Station, where the Amtrak station is.
Yes. Yeah. It was outside of South Station. Like, okay. This is a little square directly across from it.
Yeah.
And they just were there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And Dewey Square is the name of the area. Now it's like a garden and other stuff, but
okay,
that's where they, in the middle of two highways, 93 and something else.
Right. I mean, that would make them visible, I suppose.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how that happened, but anyway.
Yeah.
So there's all that stuff, and Folsom just had this big conference of social awareness groups coming together. They called it Boston Awake.
Okay.
And it was 2 weeks. And it was all different groups who already exist here inviting people into their space.
Yeah.
So, like, that big famous guy who does health in other countries, Paul Farmer? Is that his name? There's a lot of, like, bigger projects that are established here.
Okay.
And that you normally don't. You just hear about them on the news, or they talk, they write papers, and you read about them in the New Yorker, and they were all opening their doors to have people come in and learn about what they do. And universities were involved, small groups were involved, all activist stuff was going on related to all of the Black Lives Matter stuff, and all that sort of got connected into this festival. It was the first year they did it.
Yeah.
So that was cool. And then there's another group called Our Commonwealth, which is like slowly, it's a retreat where anyone can go. Doesn't matter what you're interested in or what you want to do. If you have some interest in civic engagement, you can go on this retreat. It's like $100. You meet all these people, and then you get connected to this network of people who are like trying to figure out how they want to use the energy that people have for being connected and being concerned about your country and your world and all the other things there.
That's fascinating, because it doesn't seem like there's often a lot of, I mean, you have like, town hall meetings or whatever, but it doesn't seem like there are a lot of engagement opportunities for people on, this sounds like kind of a broad scale.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, let's see how we can make this whole place better.
Yeah, and this is two things that happen around the same time, too.
Yeah.
Our Commonwealth is a new group, I think maybe they're less than a year old, or they could be a year. And then the other thing, City Awake, it was its first year. So, I mean, it's pretty exciting because there's so many nonprofits here.
Yeah.
I work for one of them.
There we go. So that's your day job.
That's my day job. Yeah. I work at a neighborhood agency that we do town hall meetings for our little neighborhood that I work in. And it's been around for 40 years, so it's old.
Yeah.
And they do all sorts of other stuff. Kids programs, elders programs, art center, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. So, is that difficult? Do you do some wrangling of the public?
I do wrangling of the public, yes. Yeah, I say that my job, my title is community liaison, but I usually boil that down to I'm a writer and a charmer.
Okay.
I charm people into doing things, and I write for various aspects of the agency.
Gotcha.
So my boss often says I'm the collective conscious of the agency.
Ooh.
Which is a nice thing to be.
That is,
about yourself.
Seriously.
It's not always a fun thing to be.
Right. Right. It also means you're the lightning rod, I suppose.
Yeah, but exactly. I definitely come up, no one there is tough to work with, really, but I come up against a lot of, desires, conflicting desires for different aspects of the agency.
Yeah. And whenever you're mediating a public conversation, that's basically what you're trying to make two people who disagree get along.
Yeah. I mean, at least hear each other.
Yeah.
That's what I've come to discover working at this job. We're only meant to be for 2 years, and I've been there for almost 10 now.
Oh, wow.
It's been a long time. Was that I like, as uncomfortable as it is to be in that space, I really like the energy that comes out of it, of like, when people realize that they can hear each other without having to agree.
Yeah.
Like, it's not an obvious thing.
No. No. It's probably no easier than it is in traffic.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, definitely not. But also, like, for biking, I've learned over the years that it's actually not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to once I got the mantra down and, like, I know my where I'm going. I go the same routes every time, or I have a collection of routes that I take over to the other side, and it's really pretty chill.
So, is that a life lesson? Like, does that really translate upward, like from how you get around in town, like into the rest of life?
Probably.
Do you think there are some similarities there?
Yeah, I hadn't really connected those two, but yeah, that's probably true. It's like a dance of when to hold to whatever it is that you're working on versus surrender.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and like...
It's like picking your battles?
Yeah, in a way. But more... that's more oriented towards battles. And this is more like living.
Ah.
You know?
Yes. That shows my obvious bias. What was the mantra again?
Oh, yes. It's, what is it? Now I'm forgetting.
Oh, it's all good.
Something like be happy, be at peace, be something. No, because that's too aggressive. I don't need to say be. I don't know. It'll come to me. I should write it down.
Sure.
But what else? Also, Boston is really beautiful. I mean, the reason I live in JP, because to me, it's just like a gorgeous neighborhood.
Yeah, Jamaica Plain is just south of downtown.
Yeah.
And is it its own city?
No.
Okay.
Nope. It was annexed some point.
Gotcha.
Boston's, didn't do it anymore, but it was like slowly annexing all the suburbs and like sucking them in.
Kind of like Portland. There's a similar,
Yeah.
A lot of tax base. Your tax base gets bigger.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And then you have more money to put towards projects and whatnot.
Mm. Yeah.
The only downside being that usually, like, the annex parts end up getting ignored at some point.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. It's also, Boston is strange in some ways. Like, a lot of ways. But it's very... People... I was warned to not come here.
Uh-huh.
By my family, they were, like, it's super segregated. Don't go there. And I think that's something that a lot of Black America who isn't in Boston hears. And I was like, I didn't think that I was going to come here, so it didn't seem to be a problem.
Right. It's easy to ignore.
Yeah.
You're not coming here anyways.
Yeah. I was like, I'm not going to go to that school. I already knew what college I wanted to go to at the time. And then I came here, and I'm still here. And many things are true, but, JP is this gorgeous neighborhood with all these big houses and like all this greenery around it. Right next door is Dorchester, which is similar. Has a lot of greenery, has a lot of gorgeous, bizarre old houses that you would not expect the structures to be here. They look like they belong in like New Orleans or someplace.
Uh-huh.
It's like a different time. It's like, it looks like when you're going down Blue Hill Ave and stuff like that, it was like the 50s.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, it's nice because the structures are low. They haven't crept up like other parts like downtown Boston. But it also just looks like it's been abandoned.
Yeah.
You go over to East Boston, it's the same thing. The streets are like, you walk out from one of the train stations, like Maverick or something, you're like, what is this? Like, all the streets are going in, like, weird directions, and it's just, like, they're like the city that time forgot.
Yeah.
But they're part of Boston.
Yeah. And is Dorchester Ave, that would be part of what you're describing?
Dot Ave, yes. If you go down Dorchester Ave in different sections, you're like, oh! Back in the 50s, back in the 2000s, you know? And it goes, they're like super long streets that go all the way down.
Yeah.
But Blue Hill Ave is the one that I was referring to, which is kind of like a biker's hell. So I don't usually go down that street.
Yeah.
Cars go really, really fast.
So, okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember if I've ridden down that or not. I think...
Dot Ave, probably.
Yeah. I was trying to make my way back to Medford, and I made the foolish assumption that if I followed one street for long enough, it would keep going the same direction. That doesn't happen.
He goes, zip.
Yeah.
Goes back around again.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But I think I hopped, like, from Ashmont over, like, towards Mattapan and then went back up the main drag. And I don't remember if that's Blue Hill or not.
It might be. Yeah, out there by Mattapan,
okay.
Yeah. Mattapan also has the high-speed rail. I don't know if you saw it.
I rode it. That was the reason I went to Ashmont. It was because I wanted to see it's, like, as I understand, the oldest rail cars.
It is so cute.
In continuous operation.
It's like a little pill.
Yeah. They were built in the 40s, and so it's got this wonderfully curvy architecture.
Yeah.
Steel plate on the, or not steel, the, like the aluminum plating on the outside.
Yeah. They're super cute.
Yeah.
People complain about them all the time. I heard people complaining about them when I first got to Boston. They're like, they don't hate them. They're really slow. And then, so I expected sort of like a really like junky, like, version of those trolleys from San Francisco.
Yeah.
And then I saw it, and I was like, look at it!
It's very
it's
cute.
It's so cute! It's a little pill with, like, a light on the front, you know?
Yeah.
I haven't ridden it yet, because I haven't had reason to.
Right.
And apparently it goes through the woods.
It does! I was very surprised. The route of the high-speed rail, Ashmont to Mattapan, is, it goes past, like, kind of a marsh out on the bay.
Yeah.
I think you can see, if I'm not mistaken, I think at some point in the route you can see Quincy across the bay.
Oh, that makes sense, yeah.
So, kind of looking south.
Yeah. Yeah, and one day I'll ride that.
Yeah.
Just looking at it, though, was almost satisfying enough.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely worth the ride. It's fun.
And so it's also probably not very high speed. I guess it's like regular train speed.
Compared to what things do these days, it's certainly a slow option. I think it used to be high speed.
Yeah. I don't know. They should do more with those trains. They're so cute.
Yeah. Apparently, they're not classified as historic. And maybe the reason is because they don't want to have to keep them up to historic standards. Do you know where the Rosebud
Diner,
yeah, over in Davis is. We were there the other night, and that used to be an actual diner in Davis. Now the car is an extension of the restaurant, which has gotten kind of fancy.
I heard about this. Yeah, a friend of mine invited us to go and check out the new version. I had been there. Friends had been doing a concert there.
Okay.
Maybe like a year ago. So I've been in there, but I hadn't. I don't have a. I'm from Jersey, so I don't really have a diner thing.
Right.
Run far away from diners.
Well, the manager there was telling me last night that this rail car, this diner car, mm-hmm. was a historic landmark. Mm. And so if anything goes wrong with it, they have to restore it very meticulously.
I bet, yeah.
And so I can understand why the T wouldn't want to pump a bunch of money into these old cars that they're running on the Ashmont line.
Yeah, when they can barely like keep up with the other things that they're trying to do, which is a lot. And, you know, there's a whole issue with how the T has run and prop, you know, people complain about everything. So it's hard to tell what the reality is, you know?
which are the important complaints.
Yeah. That is true.
Yeah. So generally during this time of year, you said you'd be taking transit to and from.
Yeah. Usually I take the Orange Line is like maybe 2 blocks away from here. It's about a 7-minute walk.
Yeah.
And I take that to Red Line and I cross over at Park Street and then I go into Cambridge and I walk, i.e. wait for the bus. Yeah. From Harvard Station to my job. So it's all told about 40 minutes.
It's not too bad.
Not bad.
Yeah.
And people have long complained about the T, but I pretty much never have. Unless it breaks sometimes, then I complain about it. Because then they don't tell you. They're just like, you just sit there, you know.
Oh, like if there's some interruption in service.
Yeah, usually it's medical emergency at Park Street.
Is it?
It's like 90% interruption, yeah.
It's like
or like a switch
having...
problem.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah,
like
I don't know.
Heart attacks?
I don't know, actually. I don't know if people are chasing each other with guns or it's a heart attack. Like, what's happening? They don't tell you that part. They're just like, it's a medical emergency. And then you wait.
And each car is its own thing, so you can't really see. Like, if it's not
no, you can't go through
car,
between the cars, like in New York. You're stuck. I mean, unless it's an emergency, I guess you can run across the little thing that attaches them. But I've never seen anybody do that.
There's a sign that tells you not to open those doors.
Yes, you're not supposed to open the doors.
I always want to, just because the sign's there. I don't think I never would have thought of that, you know, unless they said, you know, do not do this.
Yeah.
Like, well. Now it's the only thing I want to do.
It's a red button that they don't want you to push.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, and see how that could go.
So do you enjoy riding transit, or is it just like one of the things?
I really enjoy it.
Okay.
Before I moved here, like a long time ago when I was still in college, and I moved to Alston, which is like the student ghetto, they call it.
Uh-huh. It's close to, Boston University is close to Alston.
Yeah, so Boston University is there. It's in between Boston and University of Boston College.
Okay.
But it's full of BU and Northeastern and math art, maybe, students.
So it's a giant dormitory.
Yeah, this one section of it, Alston Village. The rest of that area is sort of just families. There's a big Russian population there.
Okay.
There's a very large Asian population there that wasn't there when I was there.
Uh-huh.
All sorts of different groups coming in. So anyway, when I lived there, I was on the Green Line, the B train, which is the most complained about train.
That's what I've heard.
Yes, but
it's the oldest,
I loved it.
Aside from the Mattapan.
Yes, it's like, it's a pretty old train. And it had Boylston's like one of the older stations, maybe the first station that dug out, or Park Street, one of those two. And I just loved it. It's really funny.
Uh-huh.
You know, like there were always something going on. There's always people to look at, you know, and like
people watching is a great transit pastime.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, it was slow, but you know, I wasn't outside in the cold.
Right. Right. Yeah. And when it gets cold, you want to be indoors.
Yeah. You want to be indoors. It has heat. So I can never complain about that.
Yeah. What's the coldest it's been for you here?
I didn't really get that cold here, in my opinion. I mean, it's like 6 degrees colder than Jersey. So, I don't know, maybe zero? Maybe like negative numbers? I don't even know if it's ever gotten that low.
Yeah.
because we're right on the water, so that moderates the temperature.
That's true. Yeah, if you're close to the ocean, then it doesn't get that cold.
No, and it's hard to remember that you're close to the ocean because it's all blocked.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I was here for almost a week before I actually saw the horizon of the Atlantic. So
yeah, we're on the bay anyway. We're not really on the ocean.
Yeah.
So it gets cold, but usually not for very long and not very cold.
Yeah.
So by my standards,
you wait it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it was 8 degrees. When I was here in 2007, and I think that's the coldest it ever got.
That could be true.
When I visited.
Yeah.
But it's been a long time. It hasn't been that cold for a while.
Yeah, no.
In my memory.
It usually stays around, like, 20 for a week, and maybe it'll get down to the teens, and everyone's like, oh, I'm dying. I'm like, you're not really dying. and then it goes back up to, like, 30, and all the shorts come out. People start wearing shorts, and, like, it's not really that warm. So,
it's... But we can wear shorts.
I just take the Green Line. I like that for the amazing stories I would hear. And then now the Orange Line, I don't really love. I mean, it's smelly, which is weird. I'm not sure why.
That's one of the older cars.
But none of the Blue Line is old cars, and they do not smell.
Hmm.
So I'm not really sure what happened.
What does it smell like?
It just smells old and moldy.
Okay.
And
there's a certain bacteria that's growing there that doesn't exist
in the other cars. It's other lines. I don't know. It's really weird.
Yeah.
It tends to be loud and like I don't love it.
Mm-hmm.
But the Red Line, one of the more moneyed lines, has very fresh cars.
Yes,
they do not smell and they're always shockingly swept.
Okay,
I don't know what happened to the Orange Line. They don't sweep that.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
that is interesting.
Yeah, there's definitely different cultures in the different lines. The Blue Line I know less about because it goes out to East Boston and the airport and stuff, and I don't think of that often. But they have a lot of new pretty trains on that line. But they're all, same thing in the Orange Line and the Red Line. I just sort of listen to people, and I count how many people have, wedding rings one day just out of curiosity, or I count who's actually reading a paper book.
Right.
Yeah.
There was someone in Portland who did... she did a zine for a couple years called The Constant Writer, and she did a roundup of what people were reading on their commutes.
Yeah.
That was pretty great. It'd be kind of fun to do an updated version of that.
Yeah.
And see, but it means I'd have to ride the train more. But it's kind of cool to see the literary minds in motion.
Yeah, I try to talk to people, which is interesting, because they usually shy away.
How does that go?
I say, oh, I love that book, and they're like... They give me eyes.
Yeah, me too.
Like, oh my God.
Well, one of the things that's weird is that it seems like it's harder and harder as time goes on to connect in public space with strangers.
Yeah.
And some of that is, I mean, I don't know if the trend is good, but like sometimes you don't want to be bothered.
Right.
But,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, that is true.
Do you think that's good or bad or otherwise?
I don't think it's good.
Okay.
and I don't know if it's countrywide. I kind of think of it as Boston as the cold, angry Northeast, and therefore people don't talk to each other. Unless you're not from Boston, you can usually tell because you're talking to each other.
Talking to people on the train, yeah.
but there's also the sort of respecting people's space aspect of it that I really like.
Right.
So, I don't know. But when things happen, people look up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't take much for, people are always watching.
Yeah.
I actually had an experience on the train once where this... guy, I don't know what his deal was, but he was this huge man, huge, like, white man with, like, really dark clothing on and a backpack. And he looked like somebody who would be, like, snatching people and selling them off to, like, slavery,
There we go.
Because he just had, like, a trafficking look about him.
Okay.
And so I kind of was keeping my eye on him because he was staring at me. And I was like, I hope that you're not considering me for whatever it is that you
want
to do.
What do you want?
Yeah. And I didn't notice any particular thing going on around me, and I just kept my eye on him the whole time. And I kind of looked as though I wasn't looking at him. And he stared at me the whole ride, and I was like, this guy's got something going on.
This guy's creepy.
And he got off the train, and I was like, thank God, I don't have to, like, run and scream and do whatever it is that I would have to do to get away from him.
Right.
But the woman next to me was like, what was that guy's deal?
Oh.
And immediately started talking to me, and I had no idea
that
she had been looking out for me.
So
and
then she had the same, yeah.
Yeah, a guy across from her was like, he didn't say anything, but he sort of looked at me and was like, I don't know what that was. But
raised eyebrows.
Yeah, like, I saw it,
Yeah.
And I just had a moment of being like, these people were looking out for me,
mm-hmm.
And I didn't know it. you know, right. because everyone was kind of keeping their, like, I'm reading my book, I'm doing listening to my iPod thing on. Sure. So it's a little bit, it's hard to know whether it's true that people are not connecting. Because mm-hmm. depending on the area you're in, you know, how people interact anyway.
Like, it takes some stress for those connections to become apparent.
Yeah, or, you know, it's just something to, some jumpstart a stress or something funny. You know, or even, like, one of my other favorite things on the Green Line once, there was this girl who got on, who had, I don't know, she had like silly shoes or something. And the train likes to start when you're not ready, you know? You're like, yeah, oh, I'm prepared. And then it's like, gone, you know? Yeah. And so she started to trip, you know, from way far back in the car. And the guy, there was a guy standing at the end who was not looking like he was paying attention. And she just tripped the entire length of the car. Just, like, falling, wow. Arms going.
Can't game purpose.
You know, and he not changing his expression, just stuck his arm out. Like, it didn't look like he had done anything, you know? His arm just, like, came up, she fell on his arm, he bounced her off, and they both went back to what they were doing.
That's like some noir shit right there.
It totally was. It was, I was like, did anybody see this?
Yeah.
Because it was, like, it was a whole event, you know? And I was the only one watching, maybe? I don't know. But, I you know, all that stuff goes on. And another funny thing that happened once in the train is some people approach me, but they usually do it silently, and they're usually men. And there was one point where I was, like, standing waiting for the C train or D train, and I had a big stack of papers and a binder clip. I actually wrote about this on my blog because it was so funny. And a binder clip. It was a giant binder clip, right? And I couldn't get it open. So I'm struggling with this binder clip. Trying to get onto a stack of papers, like,
just yanking on it.
Most pathetic, like, thing that could be happening. Like, I cannot open a binder clip.
Just need to work out more.
Yeah, I need to work out more. My hands, binder clips. And so this guy, no comment, you know, just was like, I can't take it anymore, you know? And he took the paper and he grabs the binder clip and clips and his hands are back to me. So I'm totally silent. Didn't say anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Nice. So the kindness of strangers.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Yeah. And nothing needs to be said.
No. And it's mostly done in silence. Like, yeah. I've had people open my bottles of Snapple or whatever, and it's always silent.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing. And I feel like that would not be apparent to anyone who doesn't ride the train a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you do have to pay attention, you know? I mean, if you watch, you will see interactions, or you will see these small moments of kindnesses or people giving people space when they need it or whatever it is, you know.
Right.
People will do it, you know, but it's all understated. And I kind of like it that way. I mean, I spend a lot of time in New York too, and I think the same thing goes on in the subways there.
Yeah. Are there any notable differences between Boston and New York as far as public transit is concerned?
Well, New York has a lot more of it.
Yeah.
New York, luckily, was not the first. So they have their system has a more of a system, really, because they can take trains off the track, and we can't do that. If the train gets stuck on the track, it's the only track.
Right.
You're stuck. But not really. I think they have more interesting music.
Uh-huh.
Their buskers are of a wider range than we have.
That's an interesting thing, because I feel like there's far less of that where I'm from.
I didn't see
any of
that.
Not a lot
of
people making music near transit stops, whereas it's an institution here.
It totally is, yeah.
And so far more interesting in New York?
Yes. Okay. I mean, they have the people with the saws. I actually hate the saws, but it's a
saws
thing. People, like, who play the saw.
Oh, like with a bow.
Yeah.
Sounds like someone singing opera.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, like, or a cat screaming.
Right.
And not a sound that I love, but it's still, like, intriguing. I'm like, oh my god, it's the guy with the saw again. You know, like, I've seen that person or those people multiple times in New York. But I mean, interaction wise, I think it's pretty much the same. You know, I haven't really noticed any real difference.
Yeah. Are there any tips that you would give someone who is riding big city transit for the first time?
Oh.
Like, if they've never done the subway or something.
People are
like that.
Usually really afraid of it when they do it the first time. I think the tip is just to be willing to get lost.
Uh-huh.
And be willing to make mistakes.
Uh-huh.
And know that you're not going to die.
Right.
Just because you made a mistake.
Yeah. Like, the wrong stop is not
the wrong stop is not the end of the world. As long as you have your phone, your wallet, and your keys.
Keep your stuff with you.
Yes. I don't know. I mean, coming to Boston, Boston's such a little city, so it's hard to even compare to, like, the bigger cities of the world.
It's pretty big to me.
I suppose.
Just, yeah, I mean, it's all relative, but yes.
Yeah. it's nothing like New York. I think, yeah, mostly just be flexible, you know, forgive yourself.
Uh-huh.
I think a lot of what people struggle with is when they make those kinds of mistakes on the train, they're like, oh, I should have known. You're like, no, you shouldn't have.
There's no possible way for you to have known.
You haven't done it before, you know? and also, like, not that everyone has this technology, you know, people can look it up, you know?
Right.
Go up above ground or whatever it is, your signal, and look it up. It's not that hard, really.
Do you find that strangers are friendly and helpful?
I've never seen people not be helpful. Yeah. Never. People often rush you. You know, you have like two people who are like, oh, I got the information for you, you know? I think the other thing that's interesting about public transit is people have this, they have this sense. Like, you usually can tell when someone is sketchy, when someone is, needs help,
uh-huh.
when someone is mental illness. You can, like, within a couple of eye movements, arm movements, whatever it is, you know. You know, and everyone acts accordingly to what's going on. You know,
right.
If there's the big homeless bundle of clothing at the end of the train, people know. You know, they're not going to bother that person.
Mm-hmm.
No, nothing's going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
And I think travelers don't necessarily realize how astute the other travelers are. They kind of assume that they're not paying attention.
Yeah.
And people may not be directly paying attention, but they're paying attention with their senses. Because
yeah.
you need to. You know, it's part of traveling, and it's part of self-preservation, it's part of being in the city. So I feel like you can just trust that people know what's going on, and if you ask someone, chances are they're not going to give you a wrong direction. They're going to try to help, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's an innate thing, and I think that being in a new place, people forget that they can trust that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, that's good advice. I gotta take that to heart next time I go somewhere I've never been before.
I mean, I remember running through the tube in London once with like a pocket of change, you know, and like just yelling at people as I was running past, trying to, because I needed the cats to channel to go back to France.
Yeah.
Like, oh, where am I going? And people were like, oh, that way. You know? That's the one you want.
What was the channel like? Because I feel like that's, for anybody who nerds out about transit, that's like
really
the holy grail.
Yeah. I found it painful to
uh-huh.
be on.
Really?
Yeah, I wouldn't do it again if I could avoid it.
Wow.
I don't know, I have a different body now, so maybe it'd be different. I'm older, but I just found it so uncomfortable
mm-hmm.
to be on. It was like, it rocks from side to side, like, imperceptibly almost.
Okay.
But just perceptibly enough to be kind of like nauseating.
To be off-putting, yes.
Yeah. and the people were fairly, I mean, we had like one porter who was attending to us, and he was like not having any nonsense. He was not friendly.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that we needed his help, so I can't call him unhelpful, but
sure.
I was like, it was like intimidating young people, you know, who were like, we don't know, we never traveled before.
Yeah.
Like
you should know.
Yeah. So I didn't dig it really. And my brother took it as well when he was in Europe, and he also didn't really love it.
Okay.
So
it's not the Holy Grail.
It might be the Holy Grail, but for a different reason. Like, it's the Holy Grail because it's amazing.
Right.
Or, you know,
it's a technological marvel.
Maybe it's not the friendly, you don't like, you're not gonna cuddle people, right?
Yeah. You don't get a hug from the conductor.
You don't get a hug. Whereas, like, Amtrak, you might get a hug. The conductors are pretty friendly.
Yeah.
They chat with you, you know.
Depends on the line.
Yes.
You're there.
I'm sure that's true, too.
I've never tried to hug a conductor on Amtrak.
No, I would not try to hug a conductor.
It's probably not a good idea. Not the way to ingratiate yourself with
no.
them.
No, they definitely don't want you touching them.
Oh.
And then, also, I wanted to, would I like to impart about Boston.
Yeah.
I think mostly that the downtown is not the city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the center of this city. But when I was living downtown, I was like, oh, this is really pretty, but we're all people of color. We're all the gay people. It gives this impression that it's a different city than it is.
Uh-huh.
And, like, once you start getting out into, like, the quote-unquote boring areas, the burbs, you get all the food, you know, you get all the local color, whatever that is, Irish bars. There's this great little, like, Polish section over in Dorchester.
Oh, really?
A really wonderful Polish restaurant over there.
I'm unaware.
Yeah. It's called Cafe Polona, I think. And okay. It's, like, really good and not expensive.
Nice.
And you can get all the pierogies your heart ever desires.
There we go. I'm a fan of pierogies. Let's try this.
As well. and there's, like, all the food trucks. They're, like, they're sort of like a migration. They, like, move around the city. Uh-huh. Like, these patterns, you know, and show up different places at different times. And I know Portland has, like, the food truck pods.
I was going to say, that's, yeah, that, like, the polar opposite. Because Portland's food trucks, ironically, never move.
Yeah.
But in most cities, yeah.
There's a little Polish one there, though, that we went to that is quite good.
Which one?
There's a little Polish food truck that had pierogi. I don't remember which square it was in, because there's, like, two main sections.
Okay.
But I loved it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, it's, like, all this undercurrents. Like, I go to a dance night.
Mm-hmm.
It's been going on for, like, 30 years.
That's impressive. That's history.
Yeah, and it's, like, self-organized. It's not connected to anybody in particular. It's, uh-huh. like, whoever has the energy to organize does it.
Is it at a club or something?
Is it at a church?
At a church, yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's called Dance Freedom every Wednesday. And it's, like, $10 to get in. Or they probably give scholarships. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's like anyone can show up.
Not bad.
I mean, I think you have to be 18.
Maybe. Okay.
There's no alcohol. Yeah. It's a completely drug free, like, space.
It's clean. What kind of dance are we talking about?
Anything.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like, it's like free form.
Uh-huh.
So people are doing whatever they do.
Okay.
So, and the music is all over the place. It's like three DJs or two DJs a night, maybe. And they just, people to show up and dance.
Nice.
And it, like, at first I was like, I don't know, like, hippie dance, all those dudes in, like, their, like, pajama pants. I don't know about that, you know? Too much. I don't want to get involved in the contact improv crowd.
Indeed.
But, I mean, they're there, but they're not the only people there.
Yeah.
Like, once I went and there were, like, these two, like, B-boys, like, in total hip-hop style.
Uh-huh.
Like, there's one white guy and there's one Asian guy. They were not connected to each other, far as I could tell. And they were just, like, doing what they do.
Yeah.
And in between, like, all these people who obviously classically train in ballet and, like people who barely dance at all, who just sort of, like, shift.
Right.
You know, and then the people who always seem to be on the floor and you're not really sure why.
It seems like you want to dance.
Yeah, you know, but you're on the floor. And it's just this, like, crazy mix of people every week. And you never know it. You
nice.
Never know that it exists.
That's a decent deal.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah.
I was a convert very quickly. I was like, I don't know about this. And I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah. So there's more than the hub. The hub is nice. The hub is historic.
The hub is nice, and it's historic, and
but
it has its prettiness.
There's so much else.
Yeah.
And that seems to be, generally when I visit a city, I try to find the stuff.
Yeah.
And it's hard because most,
you don't live there.
Yeah, most of the transportation drops you off in the middle of town.
Yeah.
Most of the tourist attractions are in downtown. But the real character and the real, the really distinctive things that you would love to take home and tell your friends about, those are in the farther flung places.
Yeah. So. And often, even if they are downtown, you wouldn't necessarily know they're there.
Right.
Like, right downtown, in an alleyway off of Arlington Street, is a puppet theater.
Really?
Where they make puppets, like these huge puppets that you would use for parades.
Uh-huh.
And it's tucked underneath a church.
Oh, wow.
And there's this little tiny, like, half door to get into.
A half door for a puppet shop seems somewhat appropriate. Yeah,
totally.
That's
it's
awesome.
A cavernous space, and it has all the puppets in there. And I don't even know what it's called, but it's been there for a long time.
And it's a theater?
No, I think it's a workshop.
Okay.
It's produced them. I don't know what they do with them exactly. I never really see them. And they might come out for, like, because we have these parades here, and they might live there. I don't even know.
Okay. Yeah.
It's very impressive.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a good find.
You would never know about it. I actually heard about it for years when I was at Emerson. They were like, there's this puppet place. It's down underneath a church, under a half door. And I was like, you guys are crazy. This doesn't exist. But it totally exists.
You're putting me on. Yeah. That's great. Well, do you want to share your, do you have a website you can direct people to?
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Wholeheart
Local. I haven't updated it since September.
Okay.
But yeah, it's www.wholeheartlocal.com. And I do plan to update it soon.
Excellent.
I was working on my book all fall, and I finished it. It's my second book. So now I will hopefully have energy to work on the blog again, because I love it because I get to talk about what we essentially talked about here.
Yeah.
You know, like not being able to open a binder clip on the train and like silly things that you see in the city and all these great festivals that go on, like all this awesome stuff. So.
Yeah. Excellent.
It's cool.
Well, we'll direct people that way.
Awesome. Thank you.
For sure. Thanks for chatting.
Yeah.
And that wraps up our conversation with Phoebe Sinclair. Get in touch with us at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Call us, why don't you? It's 503-847-9774. Add your voice to the conversation or text it in. Music is from Ryan J. Lane. And we thank our sustaining donors, without whom we could not do this. Thank you so much to Logan Smith, Johnny K, Shadowfoot, Katrina Mellengard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson, Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson, Cameron Lean, Richard Wazensky, Tim Mooney, Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly, Jim Gooden, Eric Weiss, Doug Cohen Millard, Todd Parker, Scott McAllister Morgan, Chris Gonzalez, Dan Gebhardt, Zoe Capena, John Blood, and Allison Wiley. We will see you next week with more from the Sprocket Podcast. Boston Month. Boom.
Open Roads Broadcasting.